The Secretary General race is happening against the backdrop of a Security Council that is openly debating its own legitimacy. The day-long debate on reform that the Council held this week was notable not just for its length, but for the specificity of the proposals on the table.
France's proposal, launched alongside Mexico back in 2015, is the one getting the most traction right now. The idea is that the P5 should voluntarily and collectively agree to suspend their veto power in cases involving mass atrocities, not eliminate the veto permanently, not reform the charter. Just agree as a matter of political commitment that in cases where crimes against humanity or genocide are credibly documented, they won't exercise their blocking power. As of this week, 121 states have formally endorsed this initiative. That's a majority of UN membership.
And yet the three P5 members who matter most for this proposal, Russia, China, and the United States, have not signed on. The UK and France have, which is meaningful symbolically, but doesn't give the initiative teeth. And this is where the reform debate runs into the same wall it has always run into. The veto exists precisely because the powers who designed the post-World War II order wanted an override mechanism, and no amount of moral suasion from 121 member states can compel a P5 member to limit its own power voluntarily.
What's interesting to me from a political architecture standpoint is the gap between the 121-country coalition and actual enforcement capacity. The UN Charter cannot be amended without the consent of all five permanent members, so the reform conversation is, by design, limited to what can be achieved through voluntary commitments and norm building rather than structural change. France and Mexico have been smart about framing this as a political declaration rather than a treaty obligation, because a political declaration can accumulate signatories without triggering a formal charter amendment process that would go nowhere.
Vietnam's contribution to the debate was also notable. The Deputy Permanent Representative, Nguyen Hai Lu, made the point that non-permanent members need better conditions to lead and contribute to drafting council documents, which sounds procedural, but actually speaks to a real structural imbalance. The P5 dominate the council's working methods, its informal consultation processes, and its agenda setting in ways that make the 10 rotating non-permanent seats feel more like observers than genuine co-deliberators. That's a legitimate critique that goes beyond just the veto.
The non-permanent members delivered a coordinated statement during the debate, which is notable because coordinated statements from the elected 10 aren't routine. It suggests there's a growing sense among the broader membership that the council's legitimacy deficit is reaching a point where it requires a more unified response. The frustration isn't abstract, it's grounded in specific failures. The council's inability to act meaningfully on Russia's invasion of Ukraine because Russia held the veto, its repeated deadlocks on Syria, its limited effectiveness on Gaza, these aren't hypotheticals. They are documented cases where the blocking mechanism prevented collective action.
And yet, and I think this is the part that often gets glossed over, the veto has also prevented escalations. There's a real argument that the Security Council's design, for all its dysfunction, has prevented a third world war by giving great powers a formal stake in the international system and a mechanism to protect their core interests short of military conflict. The moment any P5 member feels that the international system no longer protects its vital interests through diplomatic channels, its incentives to work within that system erode. That's not a defense of the veto's current use, but it's a genuine tension in the reform debate.
Which is why France's framing of voluntary suspension for mass atrocities is actually quite clever. It doesn't threaten the fundamental veto architecture. It just asks the P5 to exercise political restraint in the most extreme cases. The problem is that mass atrocity is itself a contested determination. Russia would argue its operations in Ukraine don't meet that definition. The US has historically resisted international criminal court jurisdiction over its own forces. China has concerns about how atrocity determinations might be applied to Xinjiang. The categories that seem obvious from the outside look very different from inside a P5 seat.